Well, hello and a very warm welcome to this week's Sweet Spot, brought to you by The Racing Post in association with Three Super Tips. And of course, on the punter's bag this week, as ever, is the main man, Steve Palmer. Steve, how are you? How's your form?
I'm all right, Dave. It was a humbling week last week, I must say. I mean, I was the only person on the planet that thought the internationals had a chance of winning. Swimming against the tide was not much fun. And the Spanish Open was really frustrating as well. I had three players finishing the top 20 at big prices, but none of them placed. So, I wish I played the top 20 market, but I didn't. So, dust yourself down and we go again.
Well, there's a lot of love in the YouTube comments for your argument against Jim Furyk. And one or two people suggested that you might have a personal issue with him as well. Is that the case?
No, I've never met the bloke. No personal issue. No, but the captain's performance were contrasting. I don't think either captain was particularly good, but yeah, we'll come to this.
Well, let's get to the Spanish Open first then. Now, you mentioned, Steve, that you had some big price selections in and around the top 20. It was a massive price winner. Angel Hidalgo, 398th in the world coming into this. It was 225-1 as well at the very start. Showed some minerals in that playoff, though, against John Rahm, didn't he?
I was absolutely delighted for Angel Hidalgo, yeah. I mean, it was such a heartwarming victory, wasn't it? Because he's a really swashbuckling player. I love his style of play. He's a real entertainer, isn't he? And it was like every shot was like his life depended on it. You know, he was so pumped up for victory. And on Sunday, you worried, didn't you, early doors. It looked like it might all be too much for him. He was bogeyed three of his first six holes. So he bogeyed three of his first six holes. It looked like he was going to get swamped by David Puig and John Rahm, but from there he settled down. He was brilliant until his birdie putt at the 72nd hole. You know, he shoved his chance to win in regulation play. He had a four footer to win in regulation play, and that was a golden chance he squandered. And just such courage to hold himself together in the playoff, wasn't it? I mean, he's going up against John Rahm in the playoff. A David versus Goliath contest. Rahm would have expected to win, but I'm so pleased for Angel. I thought it was like the DP World Tour at its finest. You know, it was a great advert for the DP World Tour. It's the most emotional I've been about a player winning without a wager all year. You know, normally when the wagers have gone, I don't get emotional about things. But it was a tearjerker, wasn't it, Dave? I know you're a tough cookie, but
I think when you see things like that, he missed that four-footer and then go on to win, that is always a player that I want to be back in, because he's showing to me that he's not just going to fall over the line. You know, he's hitting this huge high fade into 18 in the playoff, which is quite a risky shot to be playing under the pressure. Yeah. And he was just sublime, brilliant. A player that is going to win a tournament rather than fall over the line.
Yeah, that's it. It was gutsy, wasn't it, in the playoff? I mean, John Rahm would have expected to win that playoff. Yeah. And then he chunked that chip. It's a really horrible chip from Rahm on the second playoff hole, wasn't it? And, the Hidalgo fans were going crazy. I mean, the fans were on Hidalgo's side. Yeah, that's what I found most interesting about it, because John Rahm's going for history. John Rahm's trying to win a fourth Spanish Open title and, a record-breaking fourth title to beat Seve Ballesteros, and you'd think the crowd would be invested with Rahm in that. You know, they want to be there for the record breaker, but maybe Rahm's lost a bit of public support through.
I was going to say that. I don't think he's a popular chap, is he? Maybe all that money and how he's gone about in his business.
Yeah, money can't buy you love, Dave. Money can't buy you love. And Angel Hidalgo has not got much money compared to John Rahm, but he certainly had the love of the galleries. And I thought it was a joyous occasion, even though I was still disappointed with my wages.
Right, any other takeaways? Mr. Fleetwood showed up. Well, I think there was six players shot four rounds under par. He was one of them.
Yeah. Fleetwood played well again. You know, he's just consistently getting results without really threatening trophies. Rasmus Nygaard Petersen is a player to keep on your side. He finished 13th. We were on at 100-1 last week. He had an ice cold putter, tee to green, really impressive. I've got huge belief in the Danish youngster. Julien Gellier was banging on the door early doors. Yeah, great start, then faltered, finished 18th. And Alejandro Del Rey, I mean, Hidalgo put it on a show for the Spaniards, but Del Rey, I think he's got a future as well. I like the look of him. He was a bit wild on Thursday in those strong winds, but played well from there. So, yeah. Keep an eye on Alejandro Del Rey going forward.
Well, now over to Canada, Steve, and a very comprehensive success for Team USA. I know you was trying to swim against the tide, but from a very early stage, they had the upper hand.
You got washed away on Saturday, really. It was a big tsunami that come through on Saturday. But yeah, very strange atmosphere on day one. Let's start from day one, because day one obviously was a terrible start. USA won 5-0 in the four balls there. The crowd really quiet on day one. You know, I was surprised by how quiet they were. And I think Mike Weir did miss a trick early on, because he didn't play a Canadian until match four. You know, the first three matches were a Canadian free zone. I think that was the time to get a Canadian out there, maybe first up and pump the crowd up, because the crowd were miserable on the Thursday. And then the second day obviously was much better. The second day was fantastic. 5-0, 5-5 at the halfway stage. The crowd so much more invested on the Friday. And at that point you're thinking, blimey, yeah, the international's got a great chance now. America were flapping a bit at 5-5.
What were the prices, Steve, at that stage?
It's a good question. I wasn't following it as closely as I should have been. But at 5-5, I sensed an opportunity for the internationals. But then, you know, Saturday was just a disaster, wasn't it? And, you know, I was talking Wheezy up before the tournament. But I was really annoyed by Wheezy on the Saturday, because it just had a blind loyalty to the Canadians. He was slow with the Canadians on Thursday, but on Saturday, just a blind loyalty to his fellow countrymen. And, you know, he picked the same pairings in the morning and the afternoon. It's unprecedented behaviour in the President's Cup. It's never happened before. So he's left four players on the sidelines for the entirety of Saturday. You know, bemused faces everywhere, probably particularly in the internationals' locker room. I was a bit cheesed off with Wheezy. I mean, so obviously he's got a really tough job there, isn't he? The American squad is stronger than the internationals, but I just think he made a few tactical blunders. But yeah, whether that would have changed the overall scoreline, I'm not so sure.
Well, Saturday was an absolute roller coaster. There was all sorts going on. There was people holding out from all over the place. I thought it was just, as a spectacle to watch, was just really enjoyable.
Well, the big players for America turned up, didn't they? I mean, we talked about motivation beforehand. Yeah, the Americans are much more motivated than I expected. And, you know, particularly the elite players. Look at Xander Schauffele. Brilliant, wasn't he? Schauffele, Patrick Cantlay, Colin Morikawa was exceptional. And Scottie Scheffler, of course. So there were weak links in that American team. You know, Brian Harman was rubbish. Max Homer was always probably going to struggle. But it didn't matter, because the big boys played so well for America.
And just, you know, there's been quite a lot made about the fact that the Americans turned up a day early. And as the dust begins to settle, I saw Colin Morikawa's interview suggesting, like, this is what we're going to do now. Like, when we go to the Ryder Cup, we're all, you know, consciously going to make an effort to get there early, be more organised and it not be a rush. And it's like, well, that's what you should have been doing anyway.
I was really impressed with the attitude of the Americans. You're right. They went about their business professionally. When you won nine in a row, you could be forgiven for a sort of lackluster attitude. But yeah, they're obviously keen for redemption after that Ryder Cup defeat, I guess. And it was a really polished performance. I mean, for the top scorer bets, both of my top scorer picks were half a point short. You know, Tom Kim and Sam Burns, they both played four matches of a possible five. Burns was the only player in the competition who was unbeaten. I was heartbroken to not get anything out of him. And then they obviously Kim and Burns played each other in the singles. Yeah,
he said that was going to happen.
It seems to happen so often. I guess you just don't remember the times where it doesn't happen. But that was just an annoyance. You've got to be careful with those top scorer bets. But obviously the President's Cup, just an unqualified disaster. And, you know, are they going to win 11 in a row at Medina Country Club in 2026? You fear for the internationals in an away match, don't you?
Parking the President's Cup, Steve, are we seeing, you know, a good USA side now? You know, when the Ryder Cups comes around again, these players are all going to be a little bit older. You know, what are we looking at? I think there's quite a few decent young players in the European team. You know, it's going to be something special again.
Well, if you picked a Team USA B team, so take those 12 players out that played last week. Yeah, the next 12 is really good, isn't it? Would the next 12 beat the internationals in a home match at Medina? You know, they have got so many options. You know, your mate Billy Horschel left out those youngsters that we mentioned that Furyk ignored. That America inevitably will always have a really strong team, but I just think they're vulnerable in away matches. I mean, Kingston Heath in Australia could be the moment. We might get 11 consecutive American wins, and then in 2028 we go to Australia. Kingston Heath, maybe Adam Scott be the captain by then. I don't know.
Yes, I was just about to say that. Yeah.
Yeah, Jeff Ogilvy, I think, is in line for the captaincy at Medina, I've heard. Maybe Cameron Smith will be back in the team. Surely by 2028, all the golfing politics will be resolved.
Surely.
We shall see. But yeah. Lessons learned.
Lessons learned. And listen, dust yourself down and we go. I think that's the beauty of betting on golf. There's always next week. Right. And here we are. And what a tournament as well, Steve, by the way. We're going to Scotland. We've got the Alfred Dunhill Lynx Championship. Iconic. Talk to us about the courses before
That's it. Yeah. Three-course event. It's been running since 2001. So we have a round each at St Andrews, Carnoustie and King's Barnes. The cut is made after 54 holes. The cut makers play for the title at St Andrews on Sunday. All the yardages are pretty similar between these three tracks. St Andrews is 7,318 yards. Carnoustie, 7,394 yards. King's Barnes, 7,227 yards. All par 72s. We've got a massive field. 168 runners going to post. It's a pro-am, of course. Each player assigned an amateur partner. So the rounds take an age to complete. They're like six-hour rounds. Carnoustie, the most difficult course. But all the tracks set up generously with all the amateurs there. They can't, they have to show a bit of mercy. So there's scores to be made. We've got cloudy, cool conditions this week. Temperatures peaking at 14°C. So you need to take your woolly jumper. Light to moderate breezes. I think scoring will be pretty good this week.
Yeah, I was looking at the weather myself, and what do you think the spread is on the number of woolly hats seen this week?
I think you'd be mad to go out there without a woolly hat. Yeah, I'd say 90% of the field who have woolly hats. Maybe Robert Rock. I think Robert Rock's playing, isn't he? He's got such pristine hair, he never likes to put anything on it, so he might be one of the few without one.
Right, previous results then. 2020, Victor Perez. 2021, Danny Willett. 2022, Ryan Fox. 2023, Mats Fitzpatrick. Let's bring you a show then. John Rahm, 7-1, joint favourite with Rory McIlroy. Tyrrell Hatton at 11s, Tommy Fleetwood 12s, Shane Lowry 20s, Bobby Mack, a pony 25, alongside Brooks Koepka, Alex Noren 25s, Billy Horschel of West Ham United Football Club 25-1, 35-1 bar. How many in the team for this, Steve?
Billy Horschel is of West Ham United Football Club now. He's actually in the squad.
Yes.
even richer.
Give him a shirt number and everything. He can have whatever he wants.
We've got five in the team. Lots of juicy prices.
Lovely. Right. The main selection then this week, Steve, is?
It's Tom McKibben. 60-1 available about Tom McKibben. I love that price. It's time to get back on the Tom McKibben bus. He's been consistently excellent this year. 13 top 25 finishes, 8 top 10s. He was a playoff loser when we were on him in the Italian Open, you might remember, at the end of June. I've been hugely encouraged by his last two tournaments. He was 30th under great pressure at Royal County Down in the Irish Open. Lots of extra attention that week. He was in the marquee group with Rory McIlroy, playing close to home. I thought he handled it superbly for a 21-year-old. Lacking in experience. 30th was a good effort. Then last time out, BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth. Weekend rounds of 68 and 66. 66 for 10th place. Finished 10th at Wentworth. This lad, you know I'm a fan. He just oozes class for me. He's one of the best ball strikers on the circuit already. He's played loads of links golf as an amateur. He finished 14th on his Dunhill Links debut 12 months ago. So yeah, I think a second DP World Tour title is coming on Sunday for Tom McKibben.
Nice, big, juicy price, the main selection there. Next best then, Steve?
Thorbjørn Thunderbear Olesen. The same price as McKibben. Another 60-1 chance. Thunderbear, back at the scene of his 2015 Dunhill Links Championship triumph. His maiden DP World Tour victory came by the coast in the 2012 Sicilian Open. He's always been an effective links golfer. I think he's particularly dangerous on a low scoring links, which is what we've got this week. You know, he's an outstanding putter, magic fingers. I think this is an ideal assignment for him. He's an 8-time DP World Tour champion. His last win came in January. You might remember a 6-shot romp in the Ras Al Khaimah Championship. Yeah, then he switched his attention to the PGA Tour. There were flashes of brilliance over there. 14th place in the Texas Open, 16th in the Myrtle Beach Classic. Now he's back settled on his home circuit again. I'm expecting a really strong finish to the year from Olesen. He further advertised that links comfort with 12th place in the Irish Open at Royal County Down. He's never got on well with Wentworth, so easy to forgive his miscut there. The Dunhill Links, much more his cup of tea. He was runner-up in 2012 before winning in 2015.
Would I be harsh in saying that he's probably not achieved what a lot of people thought he was going to achieve when he first burst onto the scene, Steve?
I think you are being harsh. I think Bruce used to call him the flatterer, which I thought was incredibly harsh. You know, he's won eight times. He's in his early 30s. I mean, I think Olesen is a prolific champion, and he's really good in contention. So why is he not
a shorter price then? That's my point. Because I think if you go back maybe 2-3 years, he would have been half the price he is now.
It's because bookmakers are so stupid, Dave. I mean, that's why. I mean, he should be a much shorter price. He should be half the price he is. So, take advantage of it, Dave. Don't ask questions. Just get involved.
Right. Okay. with his magic fingers. Not his magic hands. He's got magic fingers.
Bit of both, I guess.
Okay. Right. Two big prices. Do the prices get bigger, Steve?
They certainly do.
Lovely. Wonderful. Wonderful. Each way bullets are plenty. Who is the next selection?
He's becoming a sweet spot regular. It's Grant Forrest, who is 70-1 best now. He did well for us when we were on at massive prices for the Irish Open, you might remember. I was sitting in Temple Bar in Dublin hoping Rory McIlroy would mess up so Grant Forrest could win that. It was quite an uncomfortable situation for me being surrounded by Irish people opposing Rory McIlroy. But he didn't quite get the job done. He closed with a 66, messed up the last hole, finished fifth. But that performance further showcased Forrest's ability, you know, his links golf ability. He's one of the best links golfers on the circuit. He won the 2012 Scottish Amateur at Royal Dunork. He won the 2014 St. Andrews Links Trophy. He was runner-up in the 2015 Amateur Championship at Carnoustie. So as an amateur, you know, he's conquered St. Andrews. He's almost conquered Carnoustie. So, you know, he's got extreme comfort for 54 of these, the holes this week. And we've seen how well-suited he is to this assignment in the previous Dunhill Links. He was 10th in 2022. He was 10th again last year. His maiden DP World Tour title came on a links track, Fairmont St. Andrews, down the road from the old course in the 2021 Hero Open. He was third in the 2022 Kazoo Classic on a links track. His course credentials are amazing, and he's in magnificent form. You know, he outscored everybody in the field on Sunday in Madrid. He closed with a 64 for third place. There's been loads of early money for Forrest this week. I completely understand it. Follow the money. I think the Scottish galleries are going to have a Scotsman to cheer on Sunday.
That's lovely. That would be nice if they've got one. Maybe Bobby Mack or Grant Forrest. That would be lovely to see the flag up there, you know, and them cheer him on. Because it would be quite boisterous, I fancy, Steve, if that's the case.
Yeah. I think Grant Forrest is an underrated player. He's really clicked into gear. And yeah, this is a perfect assignment for him. So excited.
Good. Right. It was a nice big price as well. It was the next selection.
Now we're into 2 3-figure prices. And Wackham Lagergren, 150-1 are available about Wackham Lagergren, who's been something of a standing dish in the Dunhill Links. This is certainly not the first time I've backed Lagergren at a fancy price for this assignment. Doesn't seem to matter what kind of form he's in coming into this event. He'll get his name on the leaderboard. He was fourth on his debut in 2015. He was fourth again in 2016. He was 12th in 2017, third in 2019, second in 2021. And this time, he arrives having already lifted 2 trophies this year. He won the Irish Challenge on the Challenge Tour at the start of August. Then he won another Challenge Tour event at the end of August. He's third on the Challenge Tour rankings. So his career right back on track at the age of 32. Be back on the DP World Tour full time next year. Maybe a second DP World Tour title is coming this week. His maiden win was by the coast in the 2018 Sicilian Open. So, yeah, every chance that Lagergren is sinking a few lagers in at St. Andrews on Sunday. Enormous price.
Steve, you mentioned recent years. Is this course evolved in recent years, or has it been the same setup and these three courses been the same throughout?
They have been very similar, yeah. I mean, you can't touch St. Andrews. You know, it's sacrilege to start messing too much with St. Andrews. They've obviously there's been concerns about St. Andrews being too easy to be an open venue, isn't there? Because technology has advanced and St. Andrews hasn't changed much. But you can't mess with St. Andrews, Dave. Come on, control yourself.
No, I mean, a lot of people would like to look back at see who's gone well in recent years, like you've just flagged up there.
Yeah.
But if the course has changed, you know, sometimes you can just throw the form book out the window, but that was never really going to be the case here, was it?
No, absolutely no. All course form from 2001 onwards is valid.
Valid. Okay, validation. Right, the final selection is...
John Parry! 175-1 available out there. One of only two players who is ahead of Wacom Lagergren on those Challenge Tour rankings I mentioned. We backed the other one last week, Rasmus Nygaard-Petersen. Parry is top of the rankings. He's won three times on the Challenge Tour this year, once in March, once in June, and then won the week before last. So just a consistently brilliant campaign, a resurgent Yorkshireman. Oh, Wazza will be getting very excited about John Parry. he's a proud Yorkshireman. Parry's had eight top tens this year. He was second in the Danish Challenge in May, so... Parry's in the form of his life at the age of 37. He won on the DP World Tour in 2010. So almost exactly 14 years ago, he made his breakthrough. I think his second win could come 14 years later on Sunday. He finished 24th in the Spanish Open on Sunday. I'm expecting even better in the Dunhill. On his Dunhill debut in 2010, he finished third. So he's back as a Dunhill danger man this week. I'll give you an interesting stat. I know you love a stat. Six of the last 10 Dunhills have been won by an Englishman. So I'm glad I've got an Englishman on my side this week.
Lovely. Big prices there, Steve, as well. Before we move on, let's talk about some of the big guns then that are lining up. None bigger than the sweet spot's very own Dow Whitnall. 800-1. I'm going to have a little bit of shrapnel each way on Dow. That's a big price. That is a big price.
Yeah. I mean, we earmarked him for this tournament when we were chatting with him on Sweet Spot Live, didn't we? I mean, this tournament does set up well for him. So 800-1, I'm not going to put you off.
Shrapnel each way. Right, the real big guns then, John Rahm at 7-1. Steve, what are your thoughts? I mean, his game looks in good nick.
Well, he's playing a few DP World Tour events, isn't he? He played last week. He's playing this. He's playing the Andalathea Masters because he did a sort of strategic appeal of his fines. Yeah, we were sort of talking about how he's allowed to play in this. So he appealed his DP World Tour fines for playing in LIV. And while that appeal's ongoing, he's allowed to tee up. So he's trying to get eligible for the Ryder Cup. So those three events would do the job, and then he'd be able to be selected for the Ryder Cup. The only reason he's here is for that reason. He's not highly motivated for this. I think he could just be going through the motions. Remember, he was ill before last week. Then his wife gave birth to their first daughter. His wife gave birth to her first daughter just before the Spanish Open. And then obviously quite a mentally draining week at the Spanish Open, which ended in disappointment. And he's probably a bit, chastened by the crowd, what the crowd did to him. He probably knows he's now not the most popular Spaniard. Angel Hidalgo is. So I don't know. I think this tournament, your focus is very important because I mentioned the 6-hour rounds. You can end up with a really annoying amateur alongside you. You get some
name one. 9-1.
The Ghostbusters probably the most annoying fella, any old Bill Murray.
Bill Murray. Ah, no, sure, he'd be keeping you entertained. Sure.
No. Without a script in front of him, he's not very entertaining.
So no nappy factor for poor old John Rahm. We're not having that, no?
No. I think by your third kid, the nappy factor sort of wears off a little bit. I think he's the sort of player that could get really upset by this pro-am environment. He doesn't normally play in this event for that reason. He won't enjoy himself this week. Be another miserable week for John Rahm. I don't fancy him at all. I think Rory McIlroy should be clear favourite. Rahm and McIlroy contesting favouritism. I definitely chalk up McIlroy favourite. He's a regular in this tournament. He wants to be here. He's playing with his dad. He enjoys this. Yeah. The enjoyment level is high for McIlroy in this compared to Rahm. And he's really well suited to St Andrews. He's almost won an Open at St Andrews. He's come close to winning this in the past. So yeah, For the first time in a long time, I was tempted by McIlroy this week, but I think on value grounds, you leave both of them alone and go for these big prices.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing McIlroy just sending a few off the tee, because this is a setup for him to just, drive greens.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, St Andrews is there for the taking for McIlroy. And if you remember, just before the Olympics, do you remember he was playing a practice round at St Andrews? He missed the cut at the Open, and then he went off and did some practice. And I was just like, "What the heck are you doing? Just concentrate on the Olympics." But yeah,
It was all for this week.
Might have been in the back of his mind. Yeah, I think he'd love to win this with his dad alongside him. And St Andrews win is something to tick off your bucket list, isn't it? And he hasn't had one yet. So McIlroy is tempting, but not quite big enough for me to be interested.
Okay, what about Tyrrell Hatton, previous winner?
Yeah, another liver. Two-time winner. Yeah, yes,
he went back-to-back, didn't he, I think?
Yeah. He almost completed a hat-trick as well. He's got a fantastic course record. Yeah, obviously a runner. But all the short prices at the top of the market weren't for me, because there's some really great value further down the list. And in an event where you've got three courses, two of the courses are in different counties. You've got one in Angus, one in Fife. The weather can be a bit different. The luck of the draw comes into it a fair old whack. I think you don't want to be messing around with the short prices.
Anything else to add? I see Brooks Koepka's in the field as well, Steve.
Yeah. No, lots of invites for the livers. Lots of tension in the locker room. Rory McIlroy goes past the liver and feels a bit queasy, doesn't he? So another reason to oppose McIlroy, because these live guys make him sick.
Well, let's move on then. Let's cross the Atlantic. We're going to the Sanderson Farms Championship at the Country Club of Jackson. Some pretty lumpy scores here, Steve, in recent years. 18 under, 17 under, 22 under Sam Burns 2021. 19 under Sergio Garcia 2020. Talk to me just about the course before we dive into it.
Yeah, the Country Club of Jackson in Mississippi, 7,461 yards, par 72, four par fives. It made its PGA Tour debut in 2014, tree-lined traditional track, but scoring, as you say, very low in every edition. The winning score has been between 16 under par and 22 under par in every event we've had here. I think it'll be closer to 22 under par this year, because the weather forecast is excellent, sunny and calm all week. 8 of the 10 winners at this course finished in the top 10 for greens in regulation. So pounding greens in regulation, the key to success.
Right, give us one attribute here that you think stands above all coming into
consistent ball strike. And you can't ignore those greens in regulation stats. I remember Sam Burns, you mentioned him, his win here, like his greens and regulation stats were amazing. He didn't putt well, but he won it just through relentless ball striking.
Right, let's have a look at the show then. And if you're watching us, you are watching us, of course, just pause it for a moment when the graphic appears. If you're a regular watcher and you know our Steve, who his favourites are, who he's a big fan of, just see if you can predict who Steve is going to put up as his main selection, because Steve is a massive fan of one of the players in this field. So here is the show. We've got Keith Mitchell 22-1, Matt Hughes 25s, Maverick McNeely 28s, Power 28s, Nick Dunlap at 30s, JJ Spawn at 33s, Griffin 33s, and it is 33s. Bar the rest. Main selection this week, Steve, is...
If you are watching, the main selection is Nick Dunlap, 30-1, which I think is absolutely enormous. Yes, you know I am a Nick Dunlap fan. I think you were hinting towards that, weren't you? I think he should be favourite for this tournament. He was a hero for us in the Barracuda Championship in July. That was his second PGA Tour title. He won the American Express in January when he was still an amateur. He was the world's best amateur, took the PGA Tour by storm. He's only 20 years old, this lad. He would have made his Tour Championship debut had he earned FedEx Cup points for that Amex win. Yeah, they didn't give him any FedEx Cup points for that win because he was not a PGA Tour member. So even without those points, he nearly made it to East Lake. He was fifth in the FedEx St. Jude Championship at the start of the playoffs. Then he was 31st in the BMW Championship, just missed out on East Lake. But he's been resting since then. He'd be raring to go this week. And he's playing close to home, Dave. You know, he was born in Alabama, which borders Mississippi. He went to college in Alabama. He still lives in Alabama. I like saying the word Alabama.
I can tell.
I used to drink cocktails in my younger days called Alabama Slammers. Remember being.
How have you not said Sweet Home Alabama yet? I can't believe it.
We'll save that for when he wins. We'll sing that when he wins. But yeah, he's hopped over the west border to Mississippi this week. He's the highest ranked player in the field. I mean, I don't really understand why the bookmakers are showing such disrespect. He's the best player in the field. He should be favourite. So yeah, I think he's going to complete a hat trick of PGA Tour titles on Sunday at the age of 20.
And would it be fair to say that he owes you nothing? He owes us nothing.
No, that's right. That's right. Yeah, yeah. That's another song we can sing. Bross go on about that, sorry.
Right, I didn't ask you, Steve, how many are you putting up for this tournament? I've just got too carried away with the Nick Dunlap love.
We got five in this, so five and five.
Right, okay. Yeah, that's 25 each way doubles coming on here, so it's going to be a busy week. But right, who's the next best?
It's Stephen Jager, who is 40-1. Who won his maiden PGA Tour title at the end of March. He repelled Scotty Scheffler. You must remember that one. Scotty Scheffler breathing down his neck. Jager repelled him to win his maiden PGA Tour title in the Houston Open. He's won six times on the Corn Ferry Tour, so a prolific winner at the lower grade. One of those Corn Ferry Tour wins was in Tennessee, which borders Mississippi. Jager lives in Tennessee, went to college in Tennessee. I like saying Tennessee. And so he'll be looking forward to performing close to home as well with Stephen Jager. Got a solid record in this event, but this is the first time he's teed up at Jackson as a PGA Tour champion. Been in steady, if unspectacular, form in much better events than this one of late. Big fish in a small pond this week. I think he gets his swagger back.
In your cabin, Steve, have you got like a map of America of all the courses? And little pins of where each player's from, where they went to college, where they live.
It's a good idea. I should. Yeah, I'll do that. Put it on the ceiling.
A little local effect.
Yeah, playing close to home is definitely a factor. We're in the deep south this week. And, players that are, from the deep south, much more relaxed.
Local knowledge.
Yeah, America's a massive country. And, if you go from one side, if you spend all your time on one side of America and you go to the other side of America, it can feel completely different. It's definitely a factor. And I will take your advice there and get that map installed.
Local knowledge and home comforts and all that. Right. Yeah. Next selection.
It's like you when you go to Romford Ground Stadium. I mean, you probably feel more comfortable there than you do at any other track. If you go up to Perry Bar or something, you're all at sea. That brings us nicely on to our next selection, which we nicknamed him the Greyhound. It's Cameron Champ, the Greyhound, 66-1 Cameron Champ, a mercurial talent, a three-time PGA Tour champion, so inconsistent, but his A game is absolutely magnificent, worth chancing at a big price for this. He's different gravy to most of those in attendance this week. Won this tournament on debut in 2018, a four-shot success. He was ninth last year, despite arriving in dire form. And he's shown enough lately to deserve a place in the staking plan. He was 12th in the 3M Open at the end of July. Missed the cut by a shot in the Pro Core Championship last time out, but he carded an eagle and seven birdies. His driving was amazing. He just had some problems around the greens. His chipping was was really bad. But yeah, back at a happy hunting ground this week. You have to have the champion staking plan.
The champ, the Skurlock champ. Will he come from like 20 shots off the field to like to come through and rattle home like the legendary greyhound?
Well, this is it. Yeah, well, he certainly got the ability. Yeah, Cameron Champ can just turn it on at any moment. Yeah, we miss. I call him Skologgy Champ just for the fun of it. But
has he had injuries, Cameron Champ? Is he? Where's he been, Steve?
When you've got swing speed like that, puts a lot of pressure on his back. Yeah, he's had back problems, but he's fully fit at the moment. His driving has been absolutely spectacular in the last few events. So if you just with the chipping's been a weakness, but he loves this course, really comfortable in this course. He might not have many chips to handle. Because he's so good at pounding greens here and the weather's great. Yeah, I can see him really tearing up this track. He's one of the most exciting bets this week.
Lovely. Right, that's three down. Who's the fourth in?
Taylor Moore, 55-1, who went to college in Arkansas. I'm not as fond of saying the word Arkansas. It's a bit of a struggle. But that is another one that borders Mississippi, if you check your map. So Taylor Moore, very comfortable in the Deep South. He's a Texan. His career has slowly but surely progressed. He won on the Canadian Tour in 2016, won on the Corn Ferry Tour in 2021, won his on the PGA Tour last year. His breakthrough is in the Valspar Championship. He's had a pretty solid 2024, tied second in the Houston Open, 20th in the Masters, 12th in the USPGA. You've got to respect those major performances. 10th in the Rocket Mortgage, 12th in the 3M Open. So he's got a solid record at this track. I thought he was an eye-catching price, Taylor Moore.
Okay. And the final selection, does the price get even bigger?
Yeah, this is our biggest price in this event. It's an old friend of ours. I get a lot of stick for keeping the faith with him, but it will be rewarded. It's Davis Riley. Davis Riley is 125-1. I cannot resist that. The Sanderson Farms is Davis Riley's fifth major. It's that important to him. He's a Mississippi man. You don't need to get the map out. He's playing in his backyard. He's a Mississippi man through and through. He won twice on the Corn Ferry Tour in 2020. He won a PGA Tour pairs event last year, Zurich Classic with Nick Hardy alongside him. Then he made his PGA Tour breakthrough as an individual in the Charles Schwab Challenge in May. He won by 5 shots. Have people forgotten how good that was? Romped to his first victory. All the naysayers can leave me alone if they go and watch that 5-shot romp for Davis Riley. He is brilliant on his day. Loaded with talent, clearly capable of winning this. You get 125-1 chance in a Graham race, Dave. He's not going to win. You get 125-1 chance in a golf tournament. This is a player well capable of winning this tournament by multiple shots.
Okay, lovely. When you were talking about getting stick for the selection, I'm sure Thomas Peters is not playing in this event.
Well, you're right. Those are the two that I get most stick for. My affection for those two, both classic swingers of a golf club, technical perfection. I get so aroused watching those two swing a golf club without getting too silly about this. I know I'm very faithful, but Davis Riley has already won on the PGA Tour. He's a young lad, was he? 27 years old. He's got so much more to offer. Keep the faith, Dave. What's the biggest price?
It's fair to say that this is not the deepest event, is it? So, how far he is down in the pecking order, is that a surprise to you?
Yeah, just because he's not shown much form lately. But it wasn't that long ago that he was exceptional in that Charles Schwab Challenge. He's blessed with so much ability. And as you say, this is a pretty poor event. What's the biggest price greyhound you've ever backed, Dave? Well, I can't get greyhounds out of my head at the moment.
In a one-off race.
In a one-off race, yeah.
Probably 25-1. I mean, I put up 66-1 chance in the paper once that did win, but it didn't go off 66-1.
Oh, I see. Yeah, but 125-1 dogs don't win, do they? But Davis Riley has a very good chance. Trust me.
Right, just quickly then, at the top of the market, I mean, how many events in his life has Keith Mitchell gone off the favourite?
Ruddy good question. And, you can't be backing Keith Mitchell as a favourite. What is he, 22-1? He's only won once on the PGA Tour. No spring chicken. 32. And his temperament is not the best either. So, it's a great question. Possibly never. I don't want to be back in the favourite this week.
Anything of note up there? Some look at some of the other players there. Mackenzie Hughes, Seamus Power, Patrick Fishburne, Patrick Rogers, Maverick McNeely, you had on the side a couple of weeks ago. Was anyone close to being on the team?
Well, Mackenzie Hughes is the most interesting runner of the week because obviously he's coming from the President's Cup. He's the only one that is, apart from some vice-captains. I think Camilo Villegas is playing. But Mackenzie Hughes made more headlines last week for quaffing a can of beer on the first tee than he did for any playing heroics. He'd probably have a bit of mental letdown this week, I would have thought. Maverick McNeely, I mean, come on. I mean, that Pro Court Championship performance, that was a golden opportunity for him in his home state. He froze. He sensed the opportunity. He probably read my preview. And Maverick and his brother had a mare that week. If Maverick McNeely wins this week, then it could be a trip to the pylon. I've got some trust issues with Maverick after that Pro Court Championship performance. It was so disappointing. I'm very happy with my five in each, Dave. And get on those each way doubles, as you say.
I like it. We're not quite in the realms of, Bill Werbenick around a snooker table, but, drinking beers, smoking as well on the call, Steve. What are your thoughts on all that?
Was that Charlie Hull? Charlie Hull likes it. I think that's just an attention seeker. You can't, Charlie Hull seems to like the attention. I can't condone smoking cigarettes and encouraging children to smoke cigarettes. There'll be a lot of young girls that look up to Charlie Hull. I must be getting such an old man now. This is a really serious sermon, isn't it? come on, Charlie. You must be a better role model for all those young girl golfers. Put the cigarettes away. Just kind of just go to a private room and have a little cigarette. I'm anti-cigarettes, Dave.
That's fair enough. Right, give us another overview then, Steve. As I mentioned, five from each event. So we've got 25 each way doubles at massive prices. So we can play small to win big. Just give us a roundup of the selections.
You can play small to win big, or you could you can have one each way double. I mean, I can't contain my excitement about this youngsters double. Tom McKibben and Nick Dunlap. For the rest of my career, I'll be talking about these two. You've got a 21-year-old in Tom McKibben. Got a 20-year-old in Nick Dunlap. I think they're both going to win this week. It's a really, really exciting each way double for those two. Get as many places as you can and then put them together in each way double. But then the alternative is to do the full Monty. So, Dunhill Links Championship, Tom McKibben, Thorbjørn Olesen, Wacom Lagergren, Grant Forrest, John Parry. And then in the Sanderson Farms Championship, Nick Dunlap, Stephen Jager, Cameron Champ, Taylor Moore, Davis Riley.
Can you imagine the scenes if Nick Dunlap brings home another double? It'd be great. You'd have to get a Nick Dunlap tattoo. You'd have to.
I'd have to fly over and sort of meet him, wouldn't I? And sort of just to pat him on the back. But what time will this one finish? Hopefully it won't be as late as the last one. That was 2 a.m. wasn't it, when the last double come in. I need it to be a bit earlier this time so I can fully enjoy it. We're getting very optimistic, aren't we? I love this chat. People say I'm too optimistic. This is brilliant. Already discussing that. I like it.
Well, is it manifesting? That's the thing at the moment, isn't it? If you manifest it, it will happen. So
if you believe
gamble responsibly as well. Gamble responsibly as well.
If you believe it, you'll see it. Is that it? Yeah, if you believe it, you'll see it.
Right, next week, Open de France, so the French Open. Black Desert Championship as well. It's just never ending. Steve, what you got coming up this week?
Well, I'm going to watch Tom McKibben win the Dunhill Links, and I'm going to watch Nick Dunlap win the Sanderson Farms. And then we'll have a little party and meet up again on Tuesday.
You're not leaving the house, no?
I'm really keen to get back on the front foot because I think that I'm worried that Dublin trip has unsettled me. I went to Dublin. I've come back a little bit unsettled by that, I think. In October is traditionally my strongest month of the year statistically. So, October the 1st today. So I normally have a great October and I'm keen to get on the front foot this week and kick off a glorious October.
Oh, nice. So you track that all year round, Stevie, and October's the sweet spot.
Autumn seems to get me going. I like autumn. It's one of the two, one of the two seasons where the shed is hospitable. Yeah, spring and autumn are the two best times to live in a shed. Summer's too hot, winter's too cold. So, yeah, something about autumn I absolutely love.
Lovely. Well, big 4 weeks ahead then, starting on Sunday night with Nick Dunlap bringing it home then. Fingers crossed. Right, remember to gamble responsibly. Enjoy the golf. Drop down your comments what you fancy this week as well. Who you fancy if you're following Steve in with those each-way doubles, if you're just getting involved in one golfer, and what you made of Team USA's demolition of the internationals in the President's Cup. Let us know, Steve, as ever. It's been a pleasure, and we'll see you next time.